That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine.
Hey, thank you for being here. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is episode 58, and I have always been fascinated by the creative process. How does Stephen Sondheim write a song? How does Stephen King write a novel? Well, I couldn't get either of those guys, so you're stuck with me. But if you ever wanted a peek into how one comedy writer writes comedy, that's what's on tap this week here on
Hollywood and Levine.
So this is about the process of writing comedy, and specifically my process. I mean, some of the things I'm going to mention are general policies, but by and large, everybody has their own method, and I don't know how anyone else's brain works. All I can do is tell you a little bit about mine and kind of lead you through the way I attack writing comedy. And first of all, let me just say that this is about writing comedy as opposed to performing comedy, because if you want to be a performer, yeah, there are a lot of things in common, but there's also things unique to performing, such as timing, such as your particular persona if you are going to be a stand-up comic. So what I'm going to talk about is writing comedy, since that's pretty much what I do. And after my one stint as a stand-up comic, it's all I do. First of all, I can't teach you specifically how to be funny, but if you are kind of funny or if you kind of have the aptitude for it, I can help train you a little bit and maybe make you funnier. Maybe it turns out that you are funny and you just don't know it. I talked about this about a year ago. If you are funny, your mind just works in a certain way. Here's the example that I like to give. And this is about a year or so ago. And I was driving back from LA International Airport on the notorious 405 freeway. And I saw a billboard for Wells Fargo. And the billboard said, "Your retirement starts here." And I noticed that right behind it was Hillcrest Cemetery. And so I started laughing. Yes, that's where your retirement begins and ends, by the way. And I thought to myself, how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of people drive down that same freeway, see that same billboard, read that same billboard, see the panorama behind it, but don't put the two things together? And I was not looking for something to make me chuckle on my horrendous commute from LAX, but I saw it and it just tickled me. So the point is, you can train yourself to do that. Be looking for funny things. They're all around. For years, whenever I would travel out of town, I would write a travelogue. If I would go to New York or I would go to Europe or Hawaii or wherever, and I would write a humorous travelogue that originally I just sent out to people on my email list, and eventually I posted it on the blog, and then eventually I compiled all of those for a book, which you can get on Amazon, Where the Hell Am I? Trips I Have Survived. But people would say to me, "Wow, you see all of these funny, crazy things. we never have anything like that happen to us. And you go, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You're just not aware of it. You're just not looking for it. And truly, if you go through life looking for absurdities and funny things to make you laugh, you will be a lot happier and you will live a much nicer life. So how do you train yourself? Well, one thing you can do is research. Read comic plays. Study sitcoms that you really like. Listen to albums and recordings of stand-up comics that you really are impressed with. Go to the Comedy Store a lot. Watch every sitcom you can. Go to funny movies. Also, what went before is funny too. And I know there is that belief that if it took place before 2005, it's useless. But that's not true. You will find that a lot of the things that you find funny today were done 100 years ago or 200 years ago. So go back. Do you know who Laurel and Hardy are? Go back and watch a Laurel and Hardy movie. It's very enjoyable. I mean, if you're going to do research, this is certainly a fun topic to research, comedy. If you want to look at some old classic TV series, I would suggest The Honeymooners, Bilko, The Dick Van Dyke Show. There are treasures out there for you to discover. Take a look at old Woody Allen movies. I mean, some of his first movies, like Take the Money and Run and Sleeper and Bananas and especially Love and Death. Great movie. Really, really funny. Have you seen Blazing Saddles? If not, shame on you. You should see Blazing Saddles if you want to make a career in comedy. You should see Blazing Saddles anyway. You should also see Young Frankenstein. So do your research. Another thing, learn the comic tropes. Now, there seems to be a school of thought, a recent school of thought, that if you try to do anything that even looks or smells like a joke, then you're selling out. You don't want to do anything that even resembles a quote-unquote joke using a joke form. Well, here's the thing. These joke tropes work. They've worked for thousands of years. In the same way that dramatic structure has worked down through the centuries. You need a beginning. You need your character to have some problem. You need to have a middle. And you need to have a resolution. Okay? That's dramatic structure. And the same thing with comedy. Now, the jokes themselves might be contemporary. You may have a very different sensibility comedy-wise than I have, but you can still use some of the same comic tropes. They work. They just work. Things like the rules of three, misdirection, setups and punchlines, callbacks, physical humor, sight gags, two unrelated things juxtaposed together, specificity, puns. Although, let me caution you about puns for a second. If you want to do something on paper, you know, if you are writing a comic essay, yeah, then puns are funny. They're kind of clever. But in terms of any kind of dramatic presentation, an actor has to say it. Puns usually result in groans. You don't want groans. But you do want to learn the various comic tropes. I mean, it just stands to reason. These are things that have been put in place because they work. And you need to know how they work. And then you can determine which tropes are useful and which tropes are bullshit. I'll give you an example of that. There is the myth about hard K sounds. You probably heard this. Yeah, it's funny because it's got a K in it. And this stems from vaudeville. from 120 years ago when people thought that a funny word is a word that has a hard K in it. And yeah, there are a lot of funny words that have a hard K in them. You know, words like Buick, okay, is a funny sounding word that has a K in it. But there are also a lot of funnier car names that don't have a K. What about Edsel? That's a pretty funny, stupid-sounding name of a car. So don't just assume that if a word has a K in it, it's a funny word. Now, I mentioned before about specificity, and that's really important in comedy. If you have a dog, okay? Well, you say, hey, here's my dog. Eh? If you say, here's my schnauzer, funnier. Schnauzer is a funny word. One thing, though, that I caution you about funny words, sometimes they can get so funny and so stupid that it takes you right out of the scene, you know. Here is Hookabanglin Organoglius. He's just saying it's just a group of funny sounds all strung together that aren't necessarily funny. Here is a basic theory of comedy. And this is my basic theory of comedy. If you go to another podcast, they're going to tell you something different. But this is mine. Comedy comes out of frustration. Take a character and then take him out of his comfort zone and keep the pressure really applied and see what he does. Okay, let's say you have somebody who is very organized, somebody who will plan a trip 6 months in advance, will have everything laid out, will have this perfect itinerary down to the minute for a week-long trip, and all of a sudden, a flight is canceled. What does he do? When he goes up to the ticket counter, and there are also 200 other people who are crazed because their flight has been canceled, what does the guy do? Does he go nuts? What does the ticket agent do? Is the ticket agent really angry because everyone is ganging up on her and it's not her fault? Is she completely flustered because she's not used to dealing with all of these people? So again, just find the weak spot of your character and exploit that. I've always maintained that good comedy writers are also sadists, okay? Because we will go out of our way to just keep the pressure applied and to make things as difficult for our characters as we possibly can. Because here's the thing. If you have a character and you put him in some real pressure-packed situation and you cut off all of the rational options, what you are left with is oftentimes a character doing something they normally would never do. And you go, yeah, that's where you get the comedy. And think about that for yourself. How many times have you come out of a situation and you've said to yourself, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I said that. Well, you wouldn't have said it if you had another option. You wouldn't have said it if you had time to think about it. But if you are right there in the moment, in the pressure cooker, what do you do? Oftentimes, it's something very unexpected and very comic. You know, I tell people this and they never believe me. When I'm writing a script, you know what the easiest part is? The jokes. Writing the jokes. And you go, how can that possibly be? Here is the difficult part. The difficult part is breaking the story. Because remember I talked about, say, that guy who is at the ticket counter? All right. Well, if you construct a funny situation to put your character in, then the jokes really kind of write themselves. When I was teaching at UCLA last year, I was teaching a class in spec scripts, where the students had to write a spec script from an existing show. And one of my students picked Kimmy Schmidt. And the story she came up with was that Kimmy Schmidt goes out on a date, and the date takes her to an escape room. Now, think about that. I mean, here is Kimmy Schmidt, who spent years trapped in a bunker, and she goes out on a date, and she's in an escape room that she can't get out of. How does she deal with that? Does she freak out? What does she do? I thought that was just a brilliant idea for an episode. And again, it stems from the character. What can you do to Kimmy Schmidt? What would be the worst possible first date for Kimmy Schmidt? Now, that wouldn't be the worst possible date for one of the girls in Broad City, but for Kimmy Schmidt, an escape room is the ultimate nightmare, and you get a good script out of it. One of my favorite scripts that I wrote with David for Frasier was called Room Service, and it was the episode in which Niles winds up sleeping with Lilith in a hotel, and then the next morning, Frasier knocks on the door. We wrote that entire episode in 2 days. It was just such a great premise, and there was so much that we could do with it. And if you read the script, there are not a lot of jokes on the page. By that, I mean where you can see it's a joke, because it's like, I haven't been so upset since blank, blank, blank. No, it's just attitude. But when on its feet and in the right situation, then it becomes very funny. Okay, so you have characters and you have situations. What about the actual writing process? Well, here's one thing that I recommend. It's taking an improv class. Even if you yourself have no desire to ultimately become a performer, I think improv classes are an invaluable tool for potential comedy writers. Because, number one, it teaches you spontaneity. You know, you can't sit for an hour thinking of a line. You're on stage, you got to come up with it now. And here's the thing. When you're doing improv classes, especially at the beginning, they're classes. You're not performing for an audience of 100 people. So you find yourself in a scene, and the scene doesn't go well. You can't come up with that great line. The scene bombs. So what? Big deal. You sit back down. The next scene is going to be a little bit better. You're going to drive home that night, and you're going to think back, and what could I have said here? What could I have done? You learn from it. It's great. So spontaneity, number one. Number two, kind of allows you to get out of your shell a little bit. You know, there's a lot of comedy writers who tend to be very shy, and you need to just kind of break through a little bit to be a little more, you know, uninhibited. And also, you begin to train your brain to basically perform on demand. So take improv classes. If you are in Los Angeles, I recommend Andy Goldberg's class. Yes, there are more organized classes like UCB and the Groundlings, but those classes are really kind of expensive, and I don't know, any improv class is good, but I sometimes question whether or not you're getting the most for your money if you're taking a UCB class. Okay, now let me just say this right up front. There is no substitute for experience. If you want to be a good comedy writer, this is not one of those things like the Rosetta Stone where just buy these tapes and drive around in your car, and in a week, you're speaking fluent Spanish. No, that's just not going to happen with comedy. The more you do it, the better and the faster you will become. You will avoid mistakes that you have made. You will recognize areas where you need a joke and the type of joke that it should be. You know, I read a lot of plays and scripts, and oftentimes I will see missed opportunities for laughs. I'll go, oh, you could do a great joke there. And instead they just go, yeah, I see. Or there'll be the flip side where they'll have a really good joke, but then they go past it. And you get a feel after a while for how big of a laugh you should get. But of course, this is in optimum conditions, certainly. But you start to just get a feel. You know, when you have a series of jokes, you hope they build so that the last joke gets the biggest laugh. And sometimes you'll see a big laugh, and then there'll be like a little laugh, and then a little laugh after that, and you eventually learn, no, you know what? Just stick with the big laugh and get the hell out. Try to free yourself as best you can when you're sitting down writing. And this is, again, where improv really comes in handy. Because a very common rookie mistake is that every line has to be perfect before you can go to the next line. Here's what you're going to end up with. Let me tell you. A very stilted script. Your script is not going to have any kind of real flow. It's not going to have any kind of real rhythm to it. It is just going to feel very studied and very uninspired. The other problem with that, too, is if you have spent 2 hours working on a page, and then later you decide, well, maybe I really don't need this page, or maybe there's a better, funnier way to go, you are going to be a lot more reluctant to let it go since you spent all that time on it. But if you only spent 15 minutes on that page, you go, yeah, okay, screw it. Let's just do something else. Here's something that I try to do, and I think it is something very valuable for all young writers. Let's say I come up with a joke. I always think, but is there something funnier? Because oftentimes the first thing that I will come up with, I figure, is the obvious thing. It's the first thing that everybody is going to come up with. So I try to go beyond that and say, well, what's another choice that satisfies the condition but is a little more off-center? I'm always looking to beat jokes. And again, this is where specifics are very, very important. How do I come up with the jokes? I don't know. I really can't tell you that. My brain, I guess, has just been trained so that certain neural pathways are put to work and the jokes emerge. Truly, it is a magic trick, and I thank the gods of comedy for it. But honestly, I really don't want to know too much about the details, just in case that knowledge will somehow inhibit my ability to do it. Only once have I tried to study a comedy writer, and that was when I was on Cheers, especially the first year, working with the Charles Brothers. And I've worked with a lot of brilliant comedy writers, but one of the best, if not the best, for coming up with jokes, at least among the circle of writers who I've worked with, was Glenn Charles. He was just amazing. We'd be looking for a joke. He would sit at his desk, and then all of a sudden he'd kind of rock back in his chair and have like a little chuckle, and then the room silenced. Glenn would then come out, fully formed, brilliant joke. and who's just like, wow, how did he do that? So I tried to deconstruct the jokes. Okay, how did he get from here to here? How did he go from beer to this to that to da-da, winding up with a haircut joke? Did I really learn anything from that? I don't really know. Honestly, I may have assimilated some of that and perhaps have trained my brain to think along those lines. But it's not like I'm a pitcher in baseball and a pitching coach teaches me how to throw a slider and all of a sudden my career takes off because I have this extra pitch. I have no idea whether or not I really learned anything from Glenn Charles, but just being around him was, number one, inspiring, and number two, it really forces you to up your game. There are times when I'm in a writing room situation, we're rewriting a script, we're looking for a joke, and I have a vague idea for a joke, but I just have the confidence that when I start pitching it out loud, by the time I come to the punchline, it will be there. Now, that's really a high wire act. And again, it's something that I can do now, but I sure as hell couldn't do it for the first 10, 15 years of my career. But it's the kind of thing where I know this kind of area and I know I'm kind of around it. And I think I'm close enough that when I start pitching, it will, as if I'm looking at a blurry photograph that suddenly comes into focus. And so by the time I get to that punchline, oftentimes it's there. Magic trick. I don't know how I do it. You know, David and I changed our working routine. Originally, when we started out, David would write the script in longhand in a binder, and then I would type it. And when we got to Cheers, we saw that the Charles brothers were dictating their scripts to writer's assistants. And at first, that was kind of weird for us because we weren't used to having somebody else in the room while we were writing. But eventually, we got used to it, and it certainly sped up the process, and we found that our writing just took a huge step upward as a result of it, because all of a sudden we were not so concerned with every little line. And we learned to kind of keep the script in our head because we weren't staring at the script. We weren't staring at the lines all day long. And eventually, David and I would get to the point where we weren't thinking just in terms of a line. Sometimes we could think in terms of a whole run, a whole page-long run. And then it was very beneficial to be able to say to the writer's assistant, here, just get this down, and we would vomit out a page of dialogue. And there were some jokes in there and some not jokes. And then we would take that one page and then we would go back and refine it and come up with some better jokes or cut out a couple of lines or add a few lines, whatever. But the point is, we weren't thinking just in terms of one line, then the next line, then the line after that. We were thinking in terms of a whole run, a whole page. Now, one of the most amazing things I have ever seen was James L. Brooks. And you know James L. Brooks as one of the creators of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, one of the creators of Taxi. He is also one of the creators of The Simpsons. He wrote, directed, and produced Terms of Endearment, Broadcast News. I mean, this guy is, you know, unbelievable. And I have been in rooms with Jim Brooks, in rewrite rooms, where Jim will stand up and pitch out an entire scene, not just a page, but an entire scene. Joke for joke, you could write it down and then send it to the stage. I mean, that was phenomenal. And I was working on a rewrite night once a week on a Jim Brooks show, and Jim would come in and he would do that on an almost semi-regular basis. One time I was doing a rewrite on Wings. I was working on Wings and Cheers and also the Jim Brooks show at the same time and not getting much sleep. But we were working on a script for Wings, and we were having trouble with the scene, and I had an idea for a scene. And I stood up and I channeled Jim Brooks. I pitched out an entire scene, start to finish, and sat back down, and the rest of the writers applauded. And that scene, word for word, as I pitched it, is what went down to the stage and what was ultimately filmed. I have never been able to do that again. That's it. It's, you know, like when people have adrenaline rushes and they can lift an entire Chrysler, that kind of thing. For whatever reason, that one night and one night only, it's kind of like having a superpower for 5 minutes. I was able to do an entire scene, but never, ever again. Okay, some final words of advice. Number one, don't be too hard on yourself. If you are struggling for a half hour on one joke, it could just be that it's not the right joke. Sometimes if you just go back and say, well, what else can I do? What's a different area for that joke? Or what if I give a joke to another character instead? You can kind of break out of that impasse. And my final piece of advice is this. It's maybe the most important. You're writing comedy. There should be joy. You should be having some fun during the process. Yes, there are times that you're going to get stuck. There are times you are going to be so frustrated. There are times you're going to throw out entire scenes. Guess what? I've been doing this for... Same thing happens to me. Okay? But there are also times when you're just on fire. I mean, there are times when jokes are just flying out of your head, and these scenes, it's like glass. You're writing these scenes. You can't get it down on paper fast enough. And when that happens, there is nothing better. It is so good for the soul. So really, best of luck if you want to try this for yourself. And you always can. You know, I always tell people, if you want to be a director, then you got to go out and make a video, make a film. It's going to be costly. You got to rent equipment. You got to get actors. You got to put this thing together. You got to edit it. It's probably going to be really expensive. You want to try writing, all it takes is a computer. Doesn't cost you anything. And if you're unhappy with the results, then you hit delete or you just stick it in a drawer. Believe me, there is no writer, no writer. And I'm talking Aaron Sorkin. I'm talking Patty Chayefsky. I'm talking any writer you want to name that doesn't have a drawer full of scripts that were never made, never sold, were pieces of shit. We all have them. So if you have one or two, big deal. Maybe you're going to need two or three specs before you come up with that pilot that finally hits the mark. And again, it's going to take time. Don't rush it. Enjoy the process. Have fun with it. It is comedy. And along the way, you're going to have a lot of laughs. Trust me, there are worse ways of going through life. Hollywood and Levine continues right after this. Okay, I've jabbered away long enough. That will do it for this episode of Hollywood and Levine. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, and Randy Thomas. You can follow me on Twitter, at Ken Levine, and you can always email me if you have any questions, any comments, anything you want to know, dating advice, whatever. HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Again, that's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Hollywood and Levine.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.